The question was asked, when we speak about parents' love for children and unconditional love, is there a limit? Do we say, what would we say should be a parent's response if their child says they're going to marry someone not Jewish? So I want to begin with a story and to ask you a question, okay? Unfortunately, the story is true. Imagine a family where one of the members of the family decides that they side with the Palestinian cause, and they view what we're doing here in Israel as aggression. And then this member of the family decides that he will start filming what we're doing, give information over to the enemy, sue our own country in international court, give our enemies throughout Europe and throughout the world information that would be to our detriment. What would you say should be the family's reaction? Saying, like we did on Monday night, I want to start with the extreme, and unfortunately, like I said before, this is a real story. What would we expect from the family members? We view family as people who stand by us, we stand by them, we're all one, we're connected. We have to realize that when we speak about unconditional love, we're talking about a child. Then a person reaches the age of being an adult. And then sometimes family has a responsibility to stand up to a person and say, no, what you're doing is wrong. You're crossing a line. I'll give you an extreme famous example. When Rabbi Ovadia Yosef of blessed memory agreed to the Oslo Accords, and they needed Shas's vote to pass the Oslo Accords. So one of his sons, who he held to be the greatest Talmud Chacham, argued with him vehemently and said to him, by doing this, many lives will be taken. You'll threaten the stability and the security of millions of Jews. And he argued, and when he saw he couldn't get anywhere, he broke all contact with his father. He let it be known that he would not talk to his father. And for years, it was known throughout Israel that you have one giant, Rav Avadia Yosef, and you have his son, who was a huge giant. He used to say that that son is the one who's going to take his place when he passes. And that son said, I'm not talking to you because what you're doing is wrong. You're being misguided by your people, and you're doing something that's to the detriment of the people of Israel. And he felt it was his responsibility that only he could do what he did. Meaning no one else could actually take a stance that would actually have as much of an impact on a personal level. And so he did that. When Mr. Netanyahu went to sign over swaths of land to Palestinian Authority, his brother-in-law also broke contact with him. He has a brother-in-law who's from Jew, living on what they call a settlement. And he also felt that as a family member, he has a responsibility the other way. He has a responsibility to react. So our responsibility as family is not only to stand by the person. Sometimes our responsibility is to stand up and say, no, this is wrong. When I was in high school, so the high school I went to had a dinner, and one of the honorees got up. It was at the time when the Rebbe of Chabad was deathly ill. I don't remember if it was just before he passed away or just after he passed away. So one of the people they were honoring, which is not a person they would particularly like to upset, got up to give a speech. And in his speech, he said something derisive of the Rebbe of Chabad. And the principal of the institution, the principal of the high school, got up in the middle of his speech and said, excuse me, Mr. So-and-so, but I'm very sorry. I think you should apologize for what you just said. It's not right to speak that way about a person so big in Klal Yisrael. Now, again, it would have been easier for him to sit down and be quiet, but specifically because they had a relationship, He felt it was his responsibility at that time to stand up and say, no, I'm sorry, this is wrong. So we have to be careful when we speak about giving love unconditionally. That doesn't mean that we should be blind to our responsibility within the relationship. Very often when people get divorced, so the relatives all clamber to take the side of their relative. Who said that's right? Maybe their relative is in the wrong in this story. Maybe if this person was your brother-in-law for 50 years, you shouldn't turn your back on him now. Just because suddenly, you know, now they're getting divorced. So what? I know blood runs thicker than water, but there is also a God in the world. You know, there is a right and a wrong. And sometimes, specifically because we are related, we have a responsibility to stand up and say, no, this is wrong. So, yes, we speak about unconditional love. Usually we're speaking about that with regards to a child. When a person grows up and he's a mature adult, so it's not a question of unconditional love, but there is an aspect where part of the relationship demands of us to stand up and say, I'm sorry, I think this is wrong. And it happens in marriage too. It doesn't happen often, but let's say, I'll take two extreme examples, okay? Example number one. You're sitting and benching, and as you're benching, you're fiddling with something. So your wife goes, Avram, what about a little bit of kavanah? You're talking to Ribbono Shel Olam. So you could imagine you'd be a little ticked off. Like, hey, wait a second. That's not your job. Huh?
Why is your wife in the
middle
there?
Why did she get out of the kitchen?
We won't say which Avram. You know, you're not on record, so you guys can get away with things. Let's imagine a situation where a person loses a parent and there's a question of an inheritance, and a person is given the responsibility of clearing out the parent's house. And as they're clearing out the parent's house, they start finding all kinds of jewelry that has a high value to it. And you see your spouse taking a few pieces of jewelry and pocketing them. And she says, well, what they won't know won't hurt anyone. Now, is that fair for you to stand idly by and say, her business? Or do you say, hey, we're doing all our finances together, we're living life together, and with all due respect, this is wrong, this is stealing, and I don't want to have a part in it. So you don't say that unconditional love means that I'm just going to turn them blind eye and let the other person do whatever they want. In the beginning of the week, we spoke about circumstances where loyalty can go as far as much further than what we'd expect, because there we were speaking about a person who has a weakness, a person who's fallen in life, a person who's done things that are wrong, but we're giving the person a chance. We're saying, if you want to work on it, I'm going to stand with you as you work on it. And we gave extreme examples to that. Now we're saying something else. There has to be a limit. You can't say unconditional love means that whatever you'll do, I'm just going to say, you're my son, everything's fine. A parent sometimes has the responsibility to stand up and say, you're my son and I disagree with you. And I'm protesting. And I think there's a balance within the relationship. We try to maintain that balance. Sometimes people take things way out of proportion. People will say, you know, he sent his son to a co-ed school. I'm not inviting him to my simchos. He's letting his daughters wear pants. I'm not inviting him to my simchos. I was just at a wedding tonight. People came collecting tzedakah. They stopped me at the door and said, are there men and women standing together in there? So I said, yeah. So they made an about face and walked away. So I got to give them credit. You know, they were collecting tzedakah, and yet they said, we're not going to walk into a place where there's people standing mixed. Meaning on the one hand, I got to give them credit. That's pretty impressive. On the other hand, it's like, okay, they're still kosher Jews. Their money's still kosher, you know. So you don't have to go in the women's section. But I'm just saying, people will sometimes take things very far out. But there is a point where part of our responsibility as family members is to say, this is wrong. Now, you gave the example specifically of a person whose son wed someone not Jewish. We'll get back to that in a second. Yeah.
I think there's a difference between showing love for somebody and doing something for someone, like a physical action, versus having the actual love for that person or for who that person is. And I think sometimes when we're talking about unconditional, like for example, in the case where some of the cases where the son or the parent has stopped talking to the other person, it's not because they don't love them, it's specifically because they love them enough that they, you know, they do feel that love for the person.
Those are nice words, but in the long run, you know, family breaks up this way.
You know, but even if the family breaks up, isn't there still some type of, wouldn't there still be some type of love that one person would have towards another, even though they might disagree with who that person is today?
So let's go on to his question and then let's see. We have to discern between a situation where a person is harming others and a situation where a person is harming themselves. I began with an example that's extreme, with a person who is actually a traitor. You know, he's trying to help the other side, and he's doing actions which are endangering fellow Jews. Even in such a situation, just parenthetically, we have a student here who has gone out and hugged Palestinians and told them, "I'm waiting for you to take over the state. Guys, don't give up your struggle." I feel bad for the guy. If I wasn't concerned because he's psychologically unstable, I would still invite him for a Shabbos meal and for Shabbos, because at the end of the day, he's got psychological problems, and to a certain degree, I don't fault him for it. It reaches a point where you just say the guy's crazy. So, okay, you don't hold the crazy person accountable for crazy actions. You feel bad for the person. I'm saying we have such a student. I don't know where he is today, but up until about a year ago, he used to send me pictures by email of him with Palestinian flags, of him hung in Palestinians. So, okay.
But did he go in Gaza? They killed him.
I don't know where he went. I don't know. So, what happens? Yeah.
Maybe we could say, like, what's like the halacha on this issue?
So that's the next step.
In other words, if someone is like truly evil, like the person.
I don't want to go that far.
Are we allowed to feel like, no, I don't want to love him. I don't want him to be redeemed.
Right.
I want him to be suffering.
Okay.
That's it, or something like that.
So we'll start there. I was going to start with this question. We'll start with your question. It says, what happens when the courts execute someone? Now, in order for someone to be executed by a Jewish court, they have to be pretty evil, because they have to have been warned by two witnesses prior to their action. They have to be told, if you do this, you will get the death penalty. This is biblically prohibited from this and this verse, and you may not do it. And if you do it, you'll get the death penalty. And then the person says, I don't care. I'm turning on the fire on Shabbos. Okay, why? You know. So the Talmud says, and this is how we rule in halacha, that after the courts execute a person, his relatives don't sit shiva. His relatives don't mourn his passing. On the contrary, they come and thank the court. Thank the court that executed him? Yes, because if you have an honest perspective on the world, then you sometimes you say, you know, this is right and this is wrong. We'll take a far out story. Unfortunately, also a true story. Couple's married, and the wife decides she's tired of this obligation of being married. She's going on her fling. So she tells her husband, you know, you want to divorce me, you can divorce me. You don't want to divorce me, you could stay married to me. I'm not staying here. I'm going to Las Vegas. I'm going around the world, and I'm going to go have a good time and do whatever I please. So you decide. I'm out. True story, unfortunately. This story happened in New Jersey. The story happened here in Israel not so long ago. A woman notified her husband that she's going off with the Arab construction worker from family. Not like, you know, that delight from family, from neighborhood. And one day, the wife gets up and tells her husband, I've had it, I'm leaving. So, now imagine that she's your relative. Okay, she went off and she's your relative. Now, are you going to say, well, she's my relative, of course I side with her. You know, that husband must have been such a bum to make her go off like this. Maybe he was, I don't know. But maybe not. Maybe she gave in to her desires. And maybe sometimes you have to say, look, she's in the wrong. So what if she's my relative? She's still in the wrong. So the Talmud teaches us that there are times when we look at our relative and say, I'm sorry, they went too far, they crossed a red line, and at this point, I'm not on their side. So there is such a thing in halacha. What happens if one's relative becomes an armed robber? He's robbing banks. I'm sorry, I said I was on call. So this question is actually discussed in halacha. What happens if one's relative becomes a robber? He becomes a thief. They sent a question to Rav Yair Bachrach. He was one of the great halachic authorities. He lived about 400 years ago, between three and 400 years ago. And he wrote a response called Chavot Yair. And they said to him, we have a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that when a person becomes an avarian, a person is a wanton sinner, he doesn't care. He's just going to give up on the Torah and mitzvot. So then the halacha says, we don't go out of our way to help him. We don't give him our charity, even if he's poor. We don't go and redeem him, even if he got caught. So this guy who was a willful robber, he went and stole, and finally the government caught him and put him in jail, and he was suffering because they didn't just put him in jail in many places till today. In some countries in the Far East, when a person's in jail, they suffer. It's not just being in jail. So the question they asked of Yair Bachrach is, should we redeem him from jail? Because the Shulchan Aruch says, don't help the guy. If this is the path he chose, so okay, well, we don't have to fight on his behalf. So Rav Yair Bachrach says a phenomenal thought. He says there's a difference. When the halacha says that is when he's counterfeiting money. When he counterfeits money, what happens is he's passing out counterfeit money and he's endangering the whole community. Because you're going to end up using his counterfeit money and then the government is, you run the risk that the government will make a pogrom because they'll say, look at the Jews, they're destroying our currency and destroying our economy. But when he, on a personal level, is a robber, so he's not hurting us. The government knows that there are some non-Jews who are robbers, there are some Jews who are robbers. So he's one of those that are robbers, he doesn't affect other people. And here he really turns the halacha on its face, because in Shulchan Aruch it says if he's a wanton sinner, if he has sins that he doesn't care, he just mows them over, he doesn't care about them, he keeps doing them willfully, so then we don't do anything on his behalf. Comes Rav Yair Bachrach and says, well, not exactly, it depends on if it's hurting other people or not. If it's his own issue, so we do go and help him out. So that's an interesting response by the Chavot Yair. The question you asked specifically with regards to a person whose child marries out of the faith, so that question was first addressed by the famous Rabbeinu Meir Me'or Hagola. Rabbeinu Gershom, I'm sorry, Me'or Hagola. Rabbeinu Gershom, the one who made the great institutions such as not marrying more than one wife, so he had a son that married outside. He married a non-Jewish woman. And it's quoted that Rabbeinu Gershom set shiva on him. He mourned. And according to some sources, he mourned his passing twice, meaning the son was alive and well. But from Rabbeinu Gershom's perspective, he's dead. And that's where the halacha begins, this halachic concept that if a person does such an act where he says, I'm out, so then in halacha, it's quoted, starting with Rabbeinu Gershom, that we view it as though the person committed suicide, because they're basically cutting off their life. They're saying, I will lead a life that's not a Torah lifestyle. I will hereby transgress the Torah, and I will also have my kids grow up that way. So that's a very harsh move. So I'm starting really, but there has to be a clause. There has to be an addendum. We live in a generation where a lot of people made this mistake. And a lot of people married a non-Jewish man or a non-Jewish woman. And most of the time, these people don't know any better. Oh, they know the Orthodox people believe they shouldn't do it. But in their mind, yeah, the Orthodox people also believe we wear the special undershirt that has strings coming out of it. You know, so there are funny things Orthodox people do. What does that have to do with me? So we live in a time where there's a lot of confusion. And it's not a new thing. The Rambam writes, we learned this a few months ago, the Rambam writes that the Karaites, you hit a certain point in Jewish history where their children have no concept that there's orthodoxy and that's right and what we're doing is just this fake. From their perspective, there are two paths. They grew up seeing that there are two paths and they feel like they're kosher, legitimate Jews. They don't say, hey, I'm not keeping Torah. They say, I'm keeping it my way, he's keeping it his way, what's wrong? So the Rambam says that changes our view of the Karaites. Because the first generation Karaites, well, they were apostates. But as it continued, as it became a movement, the later generation Karaites, even though they're going against the oral tradition, we don't view them as apostates. We view them as pitiful situation. They were born into a pitiful situation where they don't know any better. And that's what we call in halacha, tinok shenishma, like a child who's taken into captivity among the non-Jews. So here too, you have a lot of people who brought up their children quasi-Orthodox. I remember families that had their TV on a Shabbos clock. I remember friends in school. You're laughing. I went to from school. And I remember friends of mine telling me that on Shabbos, the Shabbos clock turns on the TV for them to watch the Super Bowl, the wrestling match, the Saturday morning cartoons, whatever it was, you know. So it's a Shabbos clock. I remember going to a friend of mine, Shabbos morning, and the father was still in his, like, shorts and undershirt. And you could see the man never went to shul, like and he was making a puzzle. He was lying there on the floor, and I was shocked. I remember the feeling as a child. There's an adult making a puzzle, and that's what he does on Shabbos? Yes, these kids grew up in a home where, from their perspective, their father made puzzles on Shabbos. He didn't go to shul. So now these kids are growing up, and they're looking at Orthodox Judaism as like, okay, there are those quacks who actually have time to go to shul every Shabbos morning, but they, of course, didn't. I remember they gave me bubble gum. I didn't get it home because they didn't have a hechsher. I remember saying, wow, okay, they eat things we don't eat. And didn't register, maybe they're not eating kosher. You know, they... you know, didn't register. As a kid, you go over, you play there, and suddenly... So, I'm saying we live in a generation where we have to be careful how we apply these halachot, because very often you have people growing up with the concept that they're good kosher Jews, they're just not doing everything everyone else is doing. They don't realize the severity of their actions. They don't realize the halacha and the halachic stance. Yeah, they don't realize the difference between their way of life and the halachic way of life. And so that brings us into a different realm. And more often than not, that's really what's going on when a person marries out of the faith. More often than not, it's a person who really doesn't understand why it's important. Like a lot of times you have children who tell their parents, you know, you chose to leave 99% of Judaism. But you tell me I have to marry Jewish. Why? For that 1%? You didn't do the other 99%. Why should I do that 1%? Why? And the kids really don't have a perspective on it. Why is it so important? So that's why I think what we basically covered is there is a certain ethical responsibility as a family member. There are times where we as family members have to react. I wouldn't say that our unconditional love means that we should condone cruelty. We brought two differing opinions between the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch and the Chav Bos Yair about whether we say for his wanton sins that already pushes him overboard, or we say so long as he isn't affecting other people, if it's his own thing, so then maybe I can find more room to be lenient and work with him or towards him. We brought the Gemara and the Halacha that if a person is executed by the courts, then from our perspective we don't mourn his passing. The relatives are supposed to walk out of court without tearing their garments. They're not allowed to sit mourning over that relative because we say, you know, the guy, with all due respect, we don't mourn his passing. And we said that, bottom line, in our day and age, it's fairly uncommon to have such a thing. Today, most of the people who are doing these things are not doing it out of spite. They're not doing it out of knowledge. They're doing it without knowing any better. So, again, going back to the original question, there is a red line. Unconditional love doesn't mean I don't draw any lines. That red line doesn't mean I won't help him or try to help him come back. But there is a red line. There is a limit which a person can cross. And even as family, we have to know that we have responsibilities to the truth and to what's right. And it's not unconditional, the relationship we have with someone else. We find this throughout Tanakh as well. You see that Avraham Avinu did not stand by Yishmael when Yishmael chose to be a pagan. You see it. You see it with Yitzchak and Esav. You see that the brothers felt that if Yosef was going overboard, then they don't have to have that brotherly love towards him. Okay, they were wrong. But you do find throughout Tanakh that there are limits. And when a person goes too far, so then we don't say, well, he's my relative, so through thick and thin, it doesn't matter how evil or wrong he is, I should stand by him. It could be my responsibility is to help him get back. Maybe we'll conclude with a story. Approximately 30 years ago, there was a group of young men who decided to bomb Arab buses. They decided that they're going to ensure that if Jews live in terror, then Arabs live in terror. And the government got working very hard on their case, and the government discovered them. They were going to put a bomb in near the Dome of the Rock. They were going to put a bomb in the Arab marketplace in the Old City. They were planning on shooting up a bus. There were a lot of plans. And they were taken to a very famous trial. And many of them sat in jail for quite a while. And, one second, I'm sorry. See there. And when one of them went to trial, one of the more famous ones, known as Rav Levinger, he had a friend who was pretty extreme leftist. And his friend came and sat next to him in court and tried to strengthen his spirit. So when there was a break in the sessions, so the media was very curious. You know, why is this guy coming? So they asked him, how come you're coming to sit next to him? You're very liberal and leftist, and he wanted to do something that's radical right. What's going on here? And I think his answer was very wise. He said, look, we're friends. Obviously, we disagree ideologically. But right now, he's not acting ideologically. Right now, he's about to be thrown in prison for who knows how many years. So right now, my friend, who I disagree with greatly, but my friend is in a time of need. And as a friend, I'm going to stand by him at this time. That doesn't change what he's going to get. I can't change what he's going to get. I can change the fact that I'm standing by him. So I think the same holds true in other circumstances. Sometimes people take this concept too far. Sometimes I have a responsibility to say I disagree. And sometimes I have a responsibility to protest in many different ways. But that doesn't mean that I should take it to the extreme. There are situations where by taking a middle ground approach, I can actually help him get back. I can help him find the right way. But you understand that it would seem I'm contradicting myself. Here I said we don't even redeem him from captivity. Here I'm saying it doesn't mean you turn your back completely on him. Obviously, it will depend on the scenario and what our capacity is. And these are complex questions in halacha. It is discussed. You asked for sources. So Nachum asked for sources. These are a few of the sources on this subject. There are more. And obviously, in each case, you have to sit down and look into it. There's a lot more to be said, and I think historically, we unfortunately went too far in being zealous. The great rabbis of Europe would visit the maskilim when they sat Shiva. They attended one another's events. So although they fought one another ideologically, there was a certain peace that ran between them. On the other hand, you had people who disagreed with certain movements within Judaism, and so they put rusty nails in the other party's mikvah and things that would really threaten other people's lives. So here you have people who went to the extreme because they disagreed with them. And that's not right. I'm saying, unfortunately, When we erred, we historically we tended to err by being too extreme, not too timid, but too extreme. And I think that a person has to be very careful to verify what the halacha really wants of him, because most of the time the halacha is actually very accepting and very. The halacha tries very hard to help a person get back. And as we discussed, the halacha takes into account a lot of the background information as well. So, if you get